Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast. Bernard Jackman and Gareth Steenson are with me this week to talk through a pretty mixed bag of results for the Irish provinces in the Champions and Challenge Cup. I'm calling this podcast the comeback, Bernard. We are well aware there have been some audio issues over the last few weeks and we've taken a bit of a battering in the comments, but hopefully all of those are behind us. We've put in a good bit of work over the last few days. We found what the issues are, and in podcasting terms, this is the first day of the rest of our lives. We're gonna get through this.
Good to be back.
Yeah, no, I do apologize if the audio experience was a bit uncomfortable over the last few weeks, but we're pretty certain we have it sorted out. So we're back as of today. Gareth Steenson also on the line with us this morning. Gareth, how are you? Keeping busy
at
the moment?
Thank you. All good. Thank you very much.
Keeping busy at the moment in terms of coaching. What have you got on your plate at the moment?
Keeping busy, yeah. Down with the Irish girls. We're getting ourselves sorted again. Looking forward into a Six Nations programme. Lots of schools rugby going on at the minute and a bit of travelling and talking about the game that we're about to talk about. So, so it's great to be out and about and back in with you guys as well.
Absolutely. Speaking of schools, you were on schools cup draw duty the other night, yes, weren't you, Bernard?
Six draws for
did
the
you,
next.
Did you give out a peace prize?
yeah, I haven't got criticised for any. I think it was very fair and open draw. But no, there was six draws for all the different competitions, girls, boys, junior, senior, development, and the most prestigious one, the Leinster Schools Senior Cup draw, had no big, head-to-heads in round one. It's an open draw for every round.
Yeah.
Probably the draw of the round would be Clongowes, St Mary's
and Mary's this year.
But in general, the big dogs, Turn Yours, the Michaels, the Black Rocks, avoid each other. So yeah, everyone's happy enough.
Good stuff. We'll get into it, I suppose, because we do have plenty to get through. As I said, a mixed week of results. Pool 2 in the Champions Cup, Munster beaten 40-14 by Bath at the Rec. A horrendous opening 20 minutes for Munster, 28-0 down, and even more frustratingly, there were plenty of chances to actually come away from that game with one or even two bonus points at the very least. Pool 3, Leinster beat Harlequins 45-28 at Aviva Stadium. Bit of a mixed bag for Leinster in that, but ultimately got the job done pretty comfortably in the Challenge Cup. Ulster absolutely battered Racing 92, 61 points to 7. That game was only 14-7 to Ulster at halftime. Racing packed it in after the break. And then the weekend was capped off by an incredibly disappointing defeat for Connacht. 21-0 up and cruising against the Ospreys just before halftime, only to lose 24-21. Before we get into the games themselves, I'd like to start on a broader conversation about the game as a whole, fellas, because there were interesting comments from Johnny Sexton a couple of weeks ago about the kicking and the kick escort clampdown over the last year or so, and interesting comments from Ross Byrne on Monday also. He spoke about how it's been a negative impact on the game and a step backwards. He says, unfortunately, I think it's how it's changed how everybody plays. Everybody knows the stats because of the new rules. Whoever kicks the ball is most likely to get it back, and even went on to point out about how he wonders our team's going to start employing second rows out on the wing, not just in a second rows taking a position up on the wing, but actually converting big forwards out onto to wider channels. So that was Ross Byrne, his Gloucester side are taking on Munster this week. And Munster's senior coach, Mike Prendergast, was also asked for his thoughts on how the game is played. He spoke in massive detail about it yesterday. I think his full answer was somewhere in the region of about 1,000 or 1,100 words. But here's just a little taste of what his feelings are at the moment.
You know, the game for me is it's becoming quite long. I would feel very, very strongly about it, to be honest with you. I think, you know, it was probably something that they, when the rules were being changed, that they probably felt that it would help the attacking aspect of it. For me, it's actually gone the other way around. You know, there's so many stoppages through it, and there is knock-ons in the air. That's a reality. Teams are looking to, or what we're looking at is teams are looking to tap the ball back. Knock-ons can happen there, or it becomes a bit of a shit fight for that ball without putting it in best terms. So I think, you know, when you had the escorts, as their roles, it did statistically stop teams kicking more, and with more, you know, ball in play. I look at the games this year. There hasn't been many standout games, if I'm honest. A lot of games have been, the trend has been going that way. The ball in play seems to be lower. So it's something that I would quit as an attack coach, obviously. And the game I love to watch and see is movement. And I think as spectators, I think that's what people want to see as well. So hopefully it's something that we see changed quite soon.
Bernard, is the game better or worse for the way it has gone in the last 12 months since the kick escorting has been ruled out?
So first of all, I massively respect Mike and his opinion. He's a deep thinker in the game and he's a brilliant coach. I think unfortunately, for whatever reason, your prerogative on this is if you're currently coaching is how it suits your team. Is influenced by that, and I don't think at the moment it suits Munster because they have become a very good structured team. So when they are secure possession, they have an attacking philosophy and shapes that can ask questions of the opposition. So they like certainty of possession. So I would have said previous to this rule, they, like a lot of other teams, treated balls kicked, contestables kicked to you like a set piece. You're more than likely going to get it back because the jumper was so well protected by the escort. And so hence, if you're not part of that escort, you can be going to other parts of the field to take your position to create attacking shape that can ask questions of the defence. So Munster, for whatever reason, Ireland, Irish teams, for whatever reason, at the moment are really struggling in the air. And it's normally we tend to be ahead of the curve. So a law is about to be changed. A law is changed. And we are the kind of the early benefactors of that. We're the early influencers of that in terms of how we see it. We don't seem to have found any real joy out of this law change. And I think Mike, I actually think the fact that he's saying it hasn't been good games and it's the game has stopped start. I actually don't think that's exclusively down to this area that he's focusing on. I think it's actually, if you look at what's happening in the game in general, the defensive ruck is more of a, as Mike would say, shit fight than it ever was. So counter rucking, coaching around referee, so hands off, roll away, etc. So that's actually slowing down the ruck ball, which is making it harder for attacks. But just let's focus on the high kicks. Mm-hmm. And Ross Byrne has obviously spoke out about it as well. Yeah. For sure it's changed. I remember, so Felix Jones was very much involved in this law change with World Rugby. And I remember when he was on guarding leave or leave absence from England, we met for coffee and he told me about it. And I was like, I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all because it was different, right? And I thought the game was actually quite okay. But he explained to me that they felt that basically they want to create more opportunities for transition, for unstructured play. And this effectively will. And also they want, and I was surprised they wanted this, but they want these athletes, you know, going for a ball in the air, 1v1, a proper contest, and to reward brilliant athleticism and the skill set that we see in rugby league in Australia, we see in Australian rules, these brilliant athletes who are able to go and fetch. And you know, I don't know if you've seen some of the clips from Saracens. They have a young kid, Noah Kauri, who's only 19. He is exceptional. He's Israel Folau type in the air. And it is exciting to watch. So I think what other teams are doing who have grasped this is they actually are treating it like a set piece, even though they don't know if they're going to get the ball back. They're not sure how that ball is going to look, but they are able to get into shape quickly from ball that's been won back. And I think that's the issue for Irish teams at the moment. In November, we saw Mac Hansen having a field day against Australia. But in general, we haven't been regathering those kicks. And as I said, we're more suited to structured play rather than unstructured. I watched Toulouse at the weekend against Sharks. You know, this idea that you have to be, you're going to put second rows on the wing. It hasn't stopped Ange Capuazzo running amok. You know, it's literally the mindset you have around it, and the skills that you give your wingers or the wingers you pick. England have seen this as an opportunity and have picked players who are brilliant in the air and have played some really good attacking rugby off the scraps that they've won back. So it has changed. I don't think it's perfect, but I think it is creating more transition and probably just as Irish provinces and the national side, we just haven't benefited from it, so we've probably a negative opinion on it.
Gareth, as the out half in the room, what's your opinion?
Yeah, look, I agree with what Bernard's saying around it has to suit your team and this sort of thing. So if I give you an example, many years ago, Saracens obviously were phenomenal in the air. They spent a lot of time on it. I remember at times the Chiefs, we would have actually spent time actually almost trying to emulate them. And when you were actually talking about the escort system, we actually probably got to a point where we probably spent too much time like you're talking about a set piece. We were putting as much into this part of the game, how we would chase kicks, as we did as our set piece attacks. So that's from that, again, I think the change in that has allowed, again, what I agree with Birch there. It's kind of like it's created opportunities for transitions. It's created opportunities for contest. Yes, it does mean that you probably can look at kicking more. But traditionally, again, if I go back to, if you look again, like what the Irish teams tend to be, like Munster, Ulster, they're all very, very good with their structured plays. They're all very good at being quite detailed in what they do. Sometimes it can be detailed up to 7-8 phases at a time. Whereas this kind of creates a little bit of chaos, how the ball actually comes back. It might be on the floor. It's about picking up scraps. So it will suit other teams. It'll suit, like for in the French game, it obviously will suit. They've got a lot big guys, they kick the ball a long way. They've probably got, like we're talking about second rows, some of the wingers are the size of second rows anyway. So it's just another rule that it suits certain teams as such. And I do feel for what Mike's saying as well, because after watching the game that they played at the weekend, Bath obviously had identified, and in those conditions as well, Bath had identified an opportunity to go after Munster in the air when they didn't kick the ball off the field. And they kept it very simple in the way they played. So I think it's something that can be used as a real attacking weapon. For me, kicking is an attacking weapon. It's never a defensive thing. It should be used in a certain way that if it creates opportunities for attack, which I feel this probably does, and it takes away that escort system, which then means that you're allowing people to go after the ball and compete. It's a bit like a scrum. A scrum should be a contest. Not that I know a lot about scrummaging, but at the same time, that's what we want, contests in our game. We want the rucks. We want people to go after the ball. We want speed in the game. And this does kind of create speed. It encourages you almost not to kick the ball off the field. It's actually encouraging you to get a ball in the air, contest. Knock-ons will happen as part of that, but again, you could get a quick turnover and away you go. You could be playing.
Just don't forget what the game was like before this change.
I spent yesterday evening actually trying to remember.
Yeah, I'll tell you what it was like. You play to an edge, okay? You get slowed down. You play a pod of nine to create a rook on the 15, okay? You put your caterpillar rook in. You get three players down the blind side. You get everybody else on ready to go chase. You put up a kick. The opposition creates an escort, so the catcher is fairly safe, but it's actually quite hard to bounce into really good. If the kick is good, the defensive line are set. So often what happened was the opposition created a ruck with a caterpillar to put it back. So it wasn't beautiful to watch either the way it was. It just gave you a little bit more security on the fact that if teams kicked onto you, probably had the ball back. And if they overkicked it, if it went infield, that opened up counterattack opportunities. But if the kick was good, if you had Ben Spencer playing against you, like Munster had the other night, the reality was you're only probably kicking that ball back to them anyway. Mm-hmm. So what this has done is it's broken the game up a little bit more. I think as well, like if you're Munster at the moment, or if you're Ireland playing South Africa, you don't want to increase the amount of knock-ons in the game, mm-hmm. Because you don't want to be facing scrums. So, but again, if you're a team who have a great scrum, you see that as a weapon rather than a weakness. So I can see completely why at the moment, Munster wouldn't be mad about this rule. But my understanding is that these rules are in for the World Cup, mm-hmm. So either I suppose evolve or keep giving out about it. But the game isn't going to, my understanding is the game isn't going to change. We might have some interpretation change, but my understanding is that these are the rules now, that we're going to have till the World Cup.
One of the other things Mike Prendergast was saying, I'm not sure if it was part of that clip as well, because as I said, it was quite a long and detailed answer he gave, but he did speak about how in removing that escort and that kind of protective shield around the kick receiver, you've probably got into a situation where even though technically it is a one-on-one aerial contest more often than not, you end up with the kicking team are at way more of an advantage. And that is probably ultimately leading to more kicks and more kicks and more kicks, the kind of snowball effect of, well, if we have such a good opportunity of either winning the ball clean or knocking it back on our side, we're going to do it more and more and more. Do you see that point of it?
No, I totally see his point. I'm not. Jesus.
Maybe the question should be like, is it weighted too much in favor now of the kicking team?
If I bring it back to the fact that the way attacks kick should be seen as an attacking weapon, if this is something that is used as a weapon and you can use to your advantage, I feel that this is something that, you know, and it is something that can be worked on. It's like anything. If you're going out and practicing skills and you have a set piece phase play attack and you go through it over and over, if this gives you an opportunity to, if you're in your 22, for an example, and you put a kick compete up and you're landing it around the halfway line and you get the ball back, and that ultimately can create opportunities to play around the halfway line. So it's kind of like one of those. It's just changing the mindset around that. This, and it's something I've probably seen a lot, is there's a real tendency to almost in Ireland to, in the 22, kick the ball off the field. So that just gives people set piece. Whereas I'm of a great mindset that why would I kick the ball off the field to somebody who then gives them a set piece that they've practiced hundreds and hundreds of times, whereas they probably haven't practiced that amount of counterattacks. So it's like, can we create a little bit of opportunity for us to get the ball back? That's kind of the way, if they use it and think of it like that, might be a useful tool as well.
Yeah, just on that, we're taking the narrative that the team who kicks the ball is guaranteed to get it back. That's not true. Once you kick the ball, it's still an advantage on a team to have that you've kicked it, because you've given away possession. So you have to have an accurate kick, you have to have a good chase, you have to win the ball in the air, etc. That's, we're taking the mindset that the team that the ball's been kicked to have no chance here. They still have the better chance. They have normally shorter to run to go catch it, and they have a chance to then go and hurt. They don't have possession, so it's this idea that it depends if you want possession or don't want possession, and how much possession you want. If you saw the stats the second half against Munster, Munster had loads of possession.
It was like 60-something possession in territory.
Amazing, but like no scores on the board. So it's just this. This mindset, like we're I think we're losing the run of ourselves here in saying, obviously, yeah, the team who kick it now have a better chance of getting it back if it's contestable, but there's still a contest, and as if you get your own part right and you're better in the air, okay, I still believe and come back in on me here, but I still believe that the team who are being kicked on to still have a better chance because they're facing the ball. At all times, you know what I mean. It's absolutely, you can get up in the air, and I think maybe one thing that I thought is that the people going up with one hand, it's not illegal, okay, but that does give them an advantage. So maybe that's an area that when they make the next law change, they say no, they have to go up genuinely trying to catch the ball, because it is easier to go up with one hand against a chase and a kick than the other way. But I still think if a team kicks the ball away, they're taking the risk that they're not going to get the ball back for a while. Or they're going to get exposed somewhere. So, but we seem to have, you have to be careful. We don't take the narrative that you're guaranteed to go win the game if you just kick the ball away. You're not. You'll get punished by good teams as well.
The other thing as well, you're just kind of saying, if you wanted to try and change the narrative a little bit, it's a bit like whenever you're going for a try scoring pass or something and someone slaps the ball down. Well, it's a little bit like if you're going up to catch the ball and you don't generally make a genuine attempt to catch the ball and you knock it on, that could be a penalty against you. So that might just change the thought process of, because I know that whenever you're talking about this type of thing, there's a real narrative. If you're chasing kicks, it's to get up on someone's face, it's to try and make a distraction, it's literally to try and put your hand up in the air. Effectively, you could nearly say it's a deliberate knock on if you were to go up with one hand to try and just slap the ball in, because you're not actually trying to catch it, but you are trying to tap it back to your team. So it could be that risk adverse, that if you're going up for it and you knock it forward, it could just be a penalty off you.
Stino, like you've experienced, so Exeter were very good at lots of different things, but you're pick and go game in close to the opposition line for maybe 3 or 4 years was better than anybody, right? And I remember I seen you Chiefs celebrating, I saw fans celebrating, I saw games being won, trophies being lifted, etc. on the back of it. But you would have had lots of people saying it was ugly and it wasn't a good thing for the game. And it took, and for years you had the advantage there. And it was obviously something that you guys put a lot of thought into and worked hard on. But for me, it's just an example of finding something that you're strong at, working on it well, being better than everybody else and making it a weapon. And at the moment, I think that's what Irish teams need to do is to find where the opportunities are in this and become good at them. Like I look at a team like Bristol, it suits them. Teams like the Bass, of course it suits them because they have Kokosinga and athletic players. They've got a good nine who can kick very well. Finn can kick well when he wants as well. And they've got a great set piece. The Springboks it suits. The Stormers it suits. But that's like, if you don't have those strengths, you need to try and find other ways of exploiting opposition.
I actually feel that in Ireland that it was something I always talked about. Irish teams should be really good at this because of the GAA background. And I know that's something I've said before. I've seen it massively with the girls' game, that GAA background around kicking and actually getting up on the ball and catching high balls. So I do think there's plenty of athletes around here who actually, it should suit the style of game that we have here. So, yeah, I do think it, if used right and used in the right tempo and talked about in the right way, it can be something that would be a super strength for Irish rugby.
Out of curiosity, Gareth, from coaching the women's game, has this... don't say law change, more law interpretation. Has that had as much of an effect on the women's game as it has the men's game? Like, are there just in general, are there as many contestable kicks in the women's game, or is it more of a long and on situation?
So I don't think it's the same sort of rules for the women's game. I think it's a slightly different thing. It's probably something I've noticed. Yes, it's the same rules, obviously, but from a women's point of view, there doesn't tend to be as many kick competes. Mm-hmm. So kicking long is a good option because a lot of the... what we found is a lot of teams will either run the ball back or don't kick it very far back. So actually, if I give you an example around our World Cup strategies around playing, kicking the ball long to France as an example, finding the land, it also means that it puts pressure on the opposition. We can get a lot of speed on the floor from a defensive point of view. And again, it just suited our strengths. We probably we're looking at our game currently now around trying to evolve it. We probably need to work a little bit more on kick competing, especially for our nines, tens, just having a thought process around it. But again, it's still relatively new in that space. I suppose if you looked at the way England played the game, you know, they probably had a couple of nines who could box kick relatively well. So, but again, it's about finding what works for your team. And I think for us, we're especially with the Irish girls at the minute, we're definitely looking at evolving to bring that kick compete in because we want to be a team that has a little bit of multifaceted and we can do different things.
So overall, the juice is worth the squeeze, is it, in terms of the way this has been refereed and officiated?
Yeah, I know it's chaotic. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect. It does create some scrums when the ball is knocked on. But I think the rewards will get better and better as teams evolve, and it will create more high tempo transition broken field play, and that's what it was created for. Mm-hmm. It also will create better one on one contests in the air. Like the reason I was skeptical about it was, I thought we'd have a load of clashes in the air and someone coming down their head. That actually hasn't happened as much. People are when two people are genuinely chasing the ball, they're banging off each other, right? But they seem to be coming down reasonably safely. And I also think that it's about evolving. I watched Georgia Japan in November, and Georgia aren't very good in the air. So they, instead of kicking to contest, they kick to hit. So instead of kicking 20, 25 metres, they kick 25 metres, 35 metres, and caught the Japanese player as he caught it, smashed him with a winger, smashed him in a back row, counter-rooked, and totally took Japan out of their high-tempo game that they played against Wales and elsewhere in November, against Ireland, actually. And Georgia probably should have beaten them in the end, which would have been a bit of a shock. So again, it's this ability to tactically think a little bit differently, implement something a little bit differently around your strengths. Munster, Ireland have strengths for sure. And it's about trying to see how we can harness something and be able to implement it into how we want to play rather than just, I know Mike's not complaining about it, he's just making a point, and it's a valid point, and it's, but as I say, I think the challenge now is to embrace it and become better at it.
Yeah, interesting to see what way it goes. I like, actually quite like Stina's suggestion that maybe down the line you could see a penalty or a free kick or something involved for a player just going up and trying to slap the ball down, and you have to maybe in theory make a genuine attempt to catch it with two hands. I do think that actually could clean it up. I'd be really interested to see how that works, but maybe that's one for another day. We could spend another 20 minutes on that. To the games as a whole, though, so as we mentioned, Ross Byrne and McPrendergast there, Gloucester and Munster meet at Porky Cueve on Saturday. Looking forward to getting down to that one. I was down at the South Africa game a few years ago in Porky Cueve. I think a Champions Cup game, though, will be even better. It feels a bit concerning, though, to be talking again about an Irish team, Bernard, that completely unravelled in a short period of time. And when things went against them, just seems to kind of lose their heads in the moment and just lost their composure in that opening 20 minutes. Saturday was a real humbling night for Munster.
Yeah,
5 minutes in, Tyburn gets the yellow card, and by the time he gets back onto the pitch, it's 21-0. They're defending 5 metres from their own line, and within a minute or two later, it's 28-0. It's game over.
Yeah, I'm quite frustrated myself because I went over there like saying it's a big ask for Munster, just based on what we saw against the Stormers, that when they come up against a team who are big and powerful and well organised, I think maybe they don't have the tools at the moment to do it, to beat them. And I think Bath are that side. I think Bath have got a brilliant squad. They're confident. They know what they're doing. And they want to take this competition seriously this year. Obviously, having won the Challenge Cup last year. So, and then I spoke to a couple of players and coaches on the pitch pre-game, and they talked about the fans and walking down from the hotel with them and how it just felt like a Munster night in Europe. Which
it's like 4,000 Munster supporters.
Amazing
there.
Support.
Even just off the TV, it's like there was a buzz leading up to the game.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I was like, geez, Munster have a chance here, because Munster in Europe on those kind of nights or days over the last 25 years have often found 25% extra. And I thought, okay, they're going to find it tonight, because it's set up for it to come off a loss, which historically they often bounce back with a big performance when they're written off, etc. The Johan factor. But yeah, you saw how hard it is if you don't have the tools to compete now. And I don't think they have the tools. And also, like, think about this competition in history. You've very rarely seen fairy tales in it. Like, the winners generally come from teams who've been knocking around the knockout stages for a while, or full of international players, or higher-end players of high quality quite quickly. There's very rarely a right or over shock, you know what I mean? And again, when you look at Bath, everything is kind of been building towards now putting their best foot forward in Europe. Look at their squad. I said, look at what they've won. Look at their confidence. And then Munster, new regime with a new coach, a lot of the same players. Obvious weaknesses in the front five, John Klein being having to pull out, Michael Milne being injured, etc. Totally made that even more relevant. But yeah, I think this Munster team, if you remember end of the season, they scraped to qualify for Europe. It's unusual that a team who just scrapes to qualify will then be winners.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying that they're not better than what happened the weekend, but probably Bath at the moment are the worst team that Munster could play, given their deficiencies.
And Gareth, I think it was a really, really odd game. And one of the other things Prendergast was saying yesterday was kind of doubly frustrating, where you obviously had that period at the start of the game, which was diabolical, 28-0 down, fastest there's ever been a bonus point try scored in the history of the Champions Cup. But for the next 60 minutes, Munster arguably dominated the game. Now, maybe Bath were comfortable in the way they were, but you look at the possession and territory and just the penalty count. I think it was 16-6 by the end. Bath conceding 16 penalties. The amount of opportunities Munster had not to come back in and win the game. I think at 28-0 down, you can probably write that off. But at the very least, they got two relatively quick tries in that first half to get up to 14 points. You had realistically 40 to 50 minutes to to just play to score two more tries. And at the very least, you walk out of the rec, you have a bonus point, and you can say it was an awful day at the office, but look, a bit like Harlequins against Leinster, we've come away with something. We can get back on the plane and have something tangible to take away from the game. The way they just butchered so many chances was doubly frustrating in line with the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's a bit difficult, though, because once you're 28-0 down, or it was 28, you know, the bonus point was in the bag after 20 minutes. I suppose they've got to change their focus a little bit. For me, whenever they started to score a couple of tries, it's actually because they didn't actually play as much. For me, they overplayed on the night. If you watch Bath, if you look at Bath's four tries as such in the first one, they haven't done anything for it. They went straight off the kickoff. Ben Spencer's actually put a kick compete, which we've just been talking about. He very quickly then decided, right, we're going to go after Munster's line out. And he literally just kicked the ball off the field. He kept putting it off. They kept making Munster make mistakes. And they just played in the right areas. And ultimately, within that yellow card with Tadhg Byrne, you talked about, the game was gone. But it was as soon as they started keeping things simple. For me, they were playing a lot of rugby around their own 10-metre line and around their 22 because they were probably chasing it. And ultimately, on a night like that, those are nights where you just don't want the ball and you just want to defend. And you could see that once Bath had kind of got their scores up, they were quite comfortable to stand back. And I know there's a lot of penalties in there, but ultimately they brought Sam Underhill on then as well, and they just were able to stand in front of them, make tackles, and basically challenge Munster to come and try and play. And I can take examples when they actually move the ball to the edge and then they put little kicks along the touchline. They've got 50-22s. They got opportunities to get inside the Bath 22, but then just a little bit of inaccuracy or maybe on a set piece. And they just maybe knocked a ball on here and there, which actually plays to the strength of Bath. And the tempo of the game always suited Bath as well, the way it was kind of played. They were quite comfortable to stand in front of them, make a tackle, go to a scrum. Ben Spencer again would just knock the ball along. So, and then at the end of the game, when you're chasing things, they obviously come up with a great play where Finn Russell puts his little kick across and Ben Spencer shows a bit of magic. But yeah, a very frustrating night in terms of for Munster, I suppose, whenever they look back on it. A bit like what Bernard says there, I think just having the tools in the toolbox at times, you know, if you're trying to play, obviously the two centres carried the ball reasonably well, but again, outside that, well, they were always struggling for the physicality battle, you could kind of see. So maybe just thinking outside the box, maybe not having the ball as much, maybe making Bath run the ball back, because Joe Cock and his singer was dropping the ball from time to time as well in the wet. So for me, it's about playing in the right areas. And again, it's playing the conditions, and maybe just slightly got that bit wrong.
Yeah, be interesting to see how this week goes. Last point on Munster I do want to make, and maybe to finish off on a little bit of a positive. A lot of players struggled out there in that type of game. First proper glimpse we got now of Edwin Odogbo, who was probably Munster's best player in that really difficult period in the first half. Obviously still slowly making his way back from that really, really awful Achilles injury from almost 2 years ago now, the Stephen's Day 2023. He looked really, really at that level physically at the weekend.
Yeah, he was well able to mix it with that bad team. And what did he get, 60 minutes in the end? He was supposed to be obviously on the bench. So yeah, he's one for future. Munster have, and when Leeson comes back in as well, he's another exciting player. I think I have no worries about Munster. I think hopefully they're going to be able to. I think they've signed a hooker. I think they hopefully get a couple more players in. I think McMillan's the right guy. He's got good assistant coaches, etc. He's got a great fan base. It's just going to take a little bit of time. And yeah, like ironically, the contestants weren't the talking point of that game all. But I can see why Mike wants to bring it up. But I think it was a sobering night for them in terms of a lot of different areas. One, their own line out malfunctioning. Two, their inability to defend goal line stands. Three, their inability to really punish Bat with goal line stands themselves, and that physical side of it. And then that overplaying, which, like, Johan after the match, Van Graan spoke to us in the studio, and he just said at halftime, he just said, give them nothing. You know, and actually they decided they weren't going to play. They were going to play even less. I totally agree with Steno. They didn't play much in the first half, but they were able to score four tries, but they decided they weren't going to play. And you know when you're significantly ahead, that the opposition aren't going to give away, take 3 points probably, because Munster were chasing the bonus point. And again, you know, if you believe you're bigger and stronger than the opposition and you're not worried about giving them line-out opportunities 5 yards out, well, you can do that, you know. But that starts with having the ability to be bigger and stronger and more powerful. So they're the challenges that not just Munster have. There's a class system in this Champions Cup, you know. Mm-hmm. There's only 4 or 5 teams who actually have the tools to win it. And unfortunately, when you see a team who has the tools, a Toulouse, a Bordeaux, a Leinster, a Bath, play a team who were potential winners, there's a big class divide, I think.
Very, very short answer. Do Bath have the tools to win it?
Yeah, although Will Stewart being injured doing exactly his tendon will be a blow to them, but I think Bath have the potential. For me, I know it's not a short answer, but I can't remember a European Cup winning team who didn't have top class halfbacks. Mm-hmm. I always look at that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bordeaux, Toulouse, Bath have those.
Yeah, luckily Thomas Dutoit is available to come in as tight head prop anyway for Bath, so they're not doing too bad.
I meant in terms of being able to rotate the two of them. Yeah.
Let's move it to Leinster. 45-28 winners against a second string Harlequins at the Aviva Stadium. Harlequins, to be honest, I'd say will be absolutely delighted with their lot coming away from the Aviva with a bonus point after resting all of their, well, most of their frontline England internationals. But Gareth, it feels like Leinster are still feeling their way through this season. It was the type of game where, in large parts, it was kind of stodgy enough. They'll be a bit frustrated with how easily they gave Harlequin some of their scores. But ultimately, just after halftime, when the game was potentially in the balance, Leinster came out and just ended it as a contest in an 11-12-minute spell where they scored a few tries. They still look capable of hitting the high notes, but it's probably just a little bit inconsistent at the moment.
It's a bit inconsistent, but if you're inconsistent and you're scoring that amount of points and you're coming away, you know, it's still, sometimes you just got to win. And it, like you said, they're still at the start of it. There's still a lot of guys getting themselves probably back out of the, you know, it must be difficult coming back out of that autumn series as well. But for me, you know, it's about winning. Winning becomes a habit. And I think the big thing is there, they've come away, they've got a good win, whatever way, it doesn't matter what team that's brought, what Quinn's brought across. I think they'll be more frustrated that they've actually given away a bonus point to them more than anything, because when you looked on paper there, 5 points is probably something they were going to get. But there was glimpses in that game, especially, you know, Jordan Armour's try, when they get their detail right, they look really, really fast in what they want to do. They look strong. They've got the squad they have right across the board. And there will be a point where they hit their straps. And there will be a point where they have a big game in them, whether it's this week again, big game for them heading obviously across to England again to play against the Tigers, traditionally a big European team. So, and really good test for where they are right now. And I think, look, at the end of the day, if you're winning games and you feel you're not actually at your best, that's probably not a bad place to be.
Yeah, you can see it particularly, Bernard, with some of their attack, where when they are getting it right, it looks so slick. There were a few of those tries they scored the other night where it was training ground stuff, but not in the sense that Harlequins were just kind of training ground dummies. It was Leinster just like, this is the move, bang, 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 try.
Yeah, well, they have so much carry ability compared to a team like Quinn's. You know, Conan, Doris, I thought the two McCarthy brothers were exceptional. I think that both of those are going to be key men for Leinster and Ireland this year. And they seem to, obviously Joe's come back from injury, Paddy's new, but they seem to have an energy and an aggression about them that, you know, isn't always obvious in other players. Other players, I think, maybe look a little bit jaded from the Lions tour. And unfortunately, I think in the 22, very few teams can stop them, because you've got Gibson Park, obviously, in his variety of pass as well, and accuracy of pass. Obviously, Jordan Larmour picking up that injury. I think hamstring injury, quite serious. So he's going to be out for a couple of months, I think.
Real killer blow, because he had an absolutely cracking game.
Yeah, he's bang on form. And obviously, you know, Leinster are very strong in that area. But with Jamie Osborne being injured as well, I think Gary Ringrose now is going to be out for a month or so. They're starting to pick up some knocks. But look, they have a huge squad. And I think they should beat Leicester. You know, Leicester aren't contenders to win Europe. But it'll be a good game for them to, I suppose, see what improvement they can make in a week, and to continue the challenge of getting a really high seeding in the competition.
It was like, you couldn't really judge much off Rico Ioane off that game. What he did do, though, he endeared himself to his teammates by passing off that ball. He had close to a walk-in try for himself, but he decided to give one to Jimmy O'Brien. That's a nice way to get the dressing room on your side, isn't it?
He'll be popular in that team. And also, like, you don't get as many caps as you do for the All Blacks if you're not top end. They'll just be hoping that he bounces back to some of the form that obviously led him to all those caps, and not the form that led him to being dropped over the summer. So, he's a nice addition. Obviously, he came on for Gary, but it'll be interesting if when Gary's fit, where they play him.
Maybe one of the final points on Leinster, a lot of this conversation has been, Gareth, around how maybe they are kind of a little bit inconsistent at the moment, but to be honest, they are still just getting used to getting all the players back in the building, and you know, it's been so disjointed with Lions rest and then the Ireland, as soon as they have them back, they're going away playing for Ireland. It was one of the things Leo Cullen said before the match last week when we were speaking to him on Friday, how, you know, this 10-game block you have around Christmas, this is the time when you really, really look forward to, because you've got the hands-on opportunity with your full squad for 10, 11 weeks leading right up to the Six Nations. And, you know, this is the period of the season where you start to get things right and you start to get the consistency coming together.
It is. It's probably the time that you get everyone in the room, is exactly what he's saying there as well. And it always is the time where it makes and breaks your season. So it kind of sets up what you're going to get towards the end of the year. So you really want to just almost be honing into, you know, the little bits of detail that getting everybody right, knowing exactly what their role is and certain things, getting people fresh as well, which is always difficult when you're playing such a long block of games. So you'll probably see now that they'll have blooded a lot of players. So if you take into account those first few games, you're probably saying it's a little bit frustrating that they haven't come through, but a lot of guys have played a lot of rugby all of a sudden, so there's a lot of minutes and a lot of players there, so you can call on a lot of the guys, which is in a unique position, and a lot of them should be feeling relatively fresh, because, you know, again, if they're not playing every single game, they're not playing 80 minutes every single week, and you can kind of manage your squad a little bit, especially around a difficult time of the year, because this time of the year, obviously, there's a lot of challenges with many different things going on around you, and it's keeping that positivity in the room, and almost like saying to a fella you might be in for a couple of weeks and then out for a couple of weeks, it makes you a little bit rejuvenated, and you know, you maybe don't get burdened down with the slog of it. So I think Leinster are in they're in a good spot. I think actually, you know, the amount of rugby they've got in, and Sam Prendergast, now you can sort of see now he's come out the back of the autumn. You know, he had some nice touches again at the weekend, great little cross kick as well for a try. So look, right across the board, you had Harry Byrne back in there too. So look, there's guys that they can call on required, and they've got a squad there who can do a lot of damage. And I think Leinster are quietly going about their business in a very good way.
Yeah, just on halfbacks, I think Harry Byrne will start on Friday night in Leicester. And the challenge for Leo and Jacques Nienaber is if you look at obviously Caelan Doris didn't play before November, but a lot of those Leinster players played a lot of game minutes in November. Even the Japan game wasn't a big rotation because Farrell wanted to get some continuity into the team. And obviously, you'd imagine it'll be full strength on Friday. Mm-hmm. But then I think La Rochelle will be undermined. So they may rotate for the two Interpro games with a view to having everybody back available then for La Rochelle. So it's a 10-game block, and there's blocks within that to get continuity into your main team, but also you've got to get rest into them as well, because those lads are going to be going deep in the season and have a Six Nations to play as well.
Yeah, a lot of rugby to be played. A final little points on the Challenge Cup. Ulster started the weekend in serious style, beat Racing 92 61-7, and a proper statement that they're going to give this competition a real crack, like we were expecting last week. But a very strange game, 14-7 at half time, and it looked like Ulster were kind of going through the motions a little bit. They weren't really at their best, but got a couple of early tries in the second half and just blew Racing apart after that. Andy Farrell was watching that match in Belfast. The camera was up on him a couple of times, and I dare say he'll have been taking a few notes on some players to have a little look at over a Six Nations. Among others, Zach Ward. Mm-hmm. When we were we've just been talking for 20 minutes about the role of wingers now and the style of player you want there. is he someone who kind of fits that bill physically and in terms of his skills as well? He was unbelievable on Friday night.
He's been brilliant since he came back from the Sevens program, hasn't he? Like, I remember him last year in Bordeaux, like against some of the best backs in the world, and he didn't look out of place. And I think he's added and continued that form, added to and continued in that form. He looks so high in confidence. I think he's certainly a player that Farrell will be looking at. I also think, with the injury, Keenan obviously has to still come back. Mac Hansen's injury is quite serious. You know, Stockdale may end up being a viable option mm-hmm. at fullback for Ireland in the Six Nations if Hugo and Mac don't get back in time. Who else? I think Postlewaite. There's no doubt. He, you know, obviously I'm not saying straight away, but big physical players are now at a premium mm-hmm. In the game, and he is someone who catches the eye. I like the way Ulster attack. It's interesting. We're saying that you can't play phase attack, or it's hard to play phase attack. But in every game this season, Ulster have managed to find opportunities to implement how they want to play for long periods. I saw a stat that Racing, no professional team in any of the major leagues have conceded as many tries after five phases as Racing this year, whatever. So I think one of Ulster's messages going into the game was, you know, let's play high phase and eventually opportunities will open up. And they didn't open up in the first half as much as they would have liked, but at the end, Racing were punched drunk. The Racing were disastrous in terms of their ability to stay in the game. But I would credit Ulster for asking lots of questions of them and wearing them down.
Yeah, and putting the foot on the throat. Mm-hmm. And Steno, we mentioned a couple of players there. I know you were at the match as well. Any other names we've missed out there? Obviously, Angus Bell came on and had a proper impact off the bench as well. Good to see him up and running.
Yeah, he did. It was actually on the way to the game, I think Ulster were sitting hoping that they were going to get to play their multi-phase game because it was torrential rain leading into the game, and actually half an hour before. But yes, I agree completely with what Bernard saying there around the style of rugby they're playing. It's very, very high tempo. I think the player of the match, Dave McCann, put in a good shift as well. He actually, you know, put his hand up. And then Nick Timmerley's going about his business really well. You know, they've got some real quality in around that back line. But the big thing that the forwards, what I was really impressed with was their ability to actually go to the line as a forward pack, and actually when their ball handling skills, they looked so comfortable in the ball. They looked so comfortable. Like, I know Racing maybe weren't at their best and they didn't have their strongest side out, but you can only play what's in front of you. And at the times, Ulster were very quick to transition. They were very quick to reload, get set. And they were very clear, and they knew that what they were trying to do around their detail. And I think the way they were ability to go with the line, pick the right option from time to time, but have the muscle to back it up whenever it was required. So I thought Jack Murphy, to be fair, you know, it was only like I think his 19th game in the pro game, was very good. You can see him growing throughout the game now. He had some mistakes in there, simple mistakes, that, you know, missed kicks to touch off, penalties. But you can see the growth. And this is the thing I think with Ulster at the minute. You can actually see them getting better with every game they play. You can actually see them understanding what Mark Sexton's trying to implement. And they're becoming quite a very, very dangerous weapon, especially with the back three. They have Rob Ballacombe, like you talked about, the other two fellas, Jacob Stockdale and Zach. But again, it's about creating those opportunities to get the ball into those spaces. And with the forward pack, the way they're playing at the minute, they're getting a bit stronger set piece. You know, so they're becoming a bit dangerous. And I think this competition is going to really be good for Ulster. I think it's something they can get their teeth into. European rugby, it doesn't matter if it's, obviously you want to be playing the top competition, but if you can go and have a good run, get some knockout games under your belt, whether they go the whole way or not, it's going to be great for the growth of that squad.
And finally then, Connacht. Geez, where to start on that? 21-0 up, lose 24-21 against the Ospreys in Bridgend. Such a strange game. I was watching on Sunday afternoon evening, and for the first 20 minutes, they were so dominant. Mm. It was like watching a senior and a junior team playing against each other. And really, really interesting. One of the rare examples of the Ospreys get a yellow card to Garen Phillips in the front row. And one of the rare examples of a front row getting an absolute hiding in a scrum, a yellow card is shown, a player comes on and just changes the picture completely. All of a sudden, they started picking up a couple of scrum penalties, and the momentum of the match just completely shifted.
Yeah, I heard Mark Jones, the Ospreys coach, speak after the game, and he said they realised that Garen was getting he was on the wrong side of the referee, and they were going to make that change anyway. But before they could make it, he had a yellow card, so they had to make it, and that was the turning point of the game. Ospreys been able to get a little bit of scrum dominance, not concede penalties there, and they got a try just before half time, which gave them a lifeline. But there's no excuse from a Connacht point of view.
No.
Like if you remember a couple of years ago, Connacht blew a home quarterfinal, I think semi-final in the Challenge Cup by sending a weaker team to Newcastle in the last round, and Connacht fans still talk about it. Like this, they're still going to qualify and all that, but this may cost them, you know, a nicer draw. And unfortunately, it wasn't because of selection. It was literally the players just completely knocked off. And their second half, I know they rallied a bit at the end, but their second half, and I can see that try before half time was just pure lapse of concentration. And the worst one for me was the Kokosinga try, where like they're just kind of their box kicking outside their 22, and Bundy gets caught for offside, which is unnecessary. And the Ospreys take a quick tap, and without one phase, they're under the post. And just, you know, if you're looking defensively, Stuart Lancaster will be looking at that going, you know, where's our urgency? Where's our organisation? Where's our hunger? And it just disappeared. And, you know, on the back of obviously a great performance against the Sharks, it's just this inconsistency that, to be fair to Stuart, it was there under Wilkins, it was there under Andy Friend. And until they get better there, they're not going to be contenders for anything.
And Stina, I think the most frustrating part for me watching it was Connacht were still ahead. It was down into the last 10 minutes and they get a penalty about 40-odd metres out, a little bit at an angle. And they called for the post and it was Sean Nocton taking the kick on. Now, it was a kick into the wind in rain. Nocton left it. Realistically, it was about 10 yards short of the post. He left that kick. I'm not going to blame Nocton too much for that actual kick, but if you're leaving the kick that short, that far short of the post, you kind of have to wonder why the kick has been taken in the first place. Because even a top level kicker in good conditions, it's a tricky enough shot at the post. And just the stage of the game it was at, where Connacht were still winning, that was the moment where it just looked like they were completely panicking.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. It's good decisions under pressure. And at that time there, you're probably not seeing it. You're probably seeing the pressure situation coming on, the wet state of the game at that point. And it's about being clear in what you want to do. And that's the difference at the minute. You feel just at the minute, Connacht are kind of finding themselves in a space now where, you know, that little bit of pressure situation, how do they get themselves across the line? It's kind of like, it leads into the urgency piece again, like what Bernard's talking around. Should they be even in that position? If they'd have got things right from right across the board. So whenever you get themselves that amount of points up, can they continue on in that vein? And it's about nailing the performance down. So look, it's right across the board, I suppose, with Connacht at the minute. They're probably at that position where they have to try to keep continuing on. So hopefully they can get themselves back into contention again this weekend against the Black Lions.
Yeah, that's who they got this weekend. Black Lion of Georgia. That game's going to be in Galway, 8 o'clock kickoff in the Challenge Cup on Saturday evening. That's where we'll leave it, fellas. Brilliant stuff today. Bernard Jackman and Gareth Steenson, as always, a reminder of the fixtures this week. Leicester Tigers against Leinster, 8 p.m. on Friday night at Welford Road. Then Munster against Gloucester at 5:30 on Saturday at Porky Queeve. Challenge Cup, both games on Saturday for Ulster and Connacht, both 8 o'clock kickoffs. Cardiff are at home to Ulster, and Connacht taking on Blacklion, as we said. We'll speak to you again soon.